When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, you're very welcome to The Tonight Show. Media Minister Catherine Martin faces tough questions at a Dáil committee tonight and defends her handling of the RTE controversy.
Is it the case from your perspective that your blood was up going up to RTE that night to do prime time and you were going to show not just RTE, but Tuna Rathlick, who was boss?
Knowing my responsibility in a crisis, that I need to be in full possession of all facts at all times.
Okay.
Catherine Martin defends her annoyance at Shuni Rahalik for not giving her complete information, but also confirms that she knew the RTE chair was on the brink of resigning before she went to national TV and gave RTE the story to put to her.
Media Minister Catherine Martin has been facing tough questions tonight at the Oireachtas Media Committee over the resignation of RTE Chair Shuaidhne Ní Rathaoirí. The Minister took part in a three-hour hearing this evening that is ongoing and defended her handling of the ongoing RTE controversy under at times intense questioning from politicians. Well, let's first go live to Leinster House, where we're joined by our political correspondent Gavin Riley for the very latest on this. So, Gavin, we have got used to some bombshells at this at Oireachtas committee this evening. I think the one from this evening, from the Minister's contribution, was this idea that Shuaidhne Ní Rathaoirí was on the brink of resigning because the minister had informed her that she was going to be sending her a letter of censure because she had been misinformed. So there clearly was communication before the primetime interview between the minister and the chair.
Yeah, there'd been ongoing contact between the department and the then chair all day, where basically it was made very clear that Catherine Martin was understandably quite annoyed because the information that she had been given by Shuaidhne Ní Rathaoirí on Monday and Wednesday was information that Catherine Martin had then gone and repeated at press conferences. And she did feel like she was justified in making clear her annoyance that it turns out that information she had been given wasn't actually correct. Now, we will get to the whole question mark around what she knew about Shuaidhne Ní Rathaoirí's emotions before this. But first of all, it is worth playing to our viewers one clip where she explains that she didn't think there was any necessarily bad faith involved, that although she did need to articulate to Shuaidhne Ní Rathaoirí her annoyance at how things had turned out, she had never questioned anyone's intentions.
At no stage have I said it was intentional. But the problem is, if I'm not getting the correct information, if the chair has been pressed on numerous occasions for clarification in relation to her role in approving, for example, the packages, in her role in knowledge of another exit package. If I'm not getting the correct information, how can I act properly as a minister? How can I be a minister in charge of the facts if the facts are not being given to me?
Now, when you hear those remarks from Catherine Martin, what it makes you're about to hear, it makes it a little bit more difficult to understand, because Catherine Martin there righteously expressing annoyance and wondering how exactly she can have some faith in a minister if it turns out that she's not getting correct information. A lot of this evening's meeting went over the timeline of what happened last Thursday. Catherine Martin having already agreed to go on prime time anyway, and then separately having this ongoing engagement through her officials with Shuaidhne Ní Rathaoirí. What has emerged today is that Shuaidhne Ní Rathaoirí was already on the precipice of resigning anyway. And we're going to hear in a moment a clip where the Arts Minister speaks to the Fianna Fáil TD, Christopher O'Sullivan, about all of that. What has emerged inside the last hour is that in advance of going on primetime anyway, no matter what she knew about Seanie Raelig's emotions and her state and whether she might have been on the brink of going, Catherine Martin not alone wrote to Seanie Raelig to express her annoyance, but also invited her in for a meeting the following morning. What's more, she then went out to RTE, learned that the story might have been about to break in another outlet, and told RTE that it was about to come up, telling them she was happy to take all of those questions. So Catherine Martin effectively handed RTE the story and asked to be asked about it, all the while knowing that Seanie Raelig was likely to resign even for receiving a verbal scolding, let alone one on national television.
She was indicating she might resign if I sent a letter.
Okay.
But I was just hopeful that she'd reflect and think about having a meeting with me.
Gavin, the Taoiseach and senior cabinet ministers have been out this week showing their support for Catherine Martin, but she was under a certain level of pressure going in there tonight. How did she perform, do you think, given that pressure?
There's something of a golden rule about how these star chambers, if you like, have begun to work in the last couple of years. They've been something of a feature for political life in Ireland for about 7 years now, where routinely if there's a big scandal that a minister is called in either to a committee or to the Dáil Chamber itself for questioning. And the golden rule about how they survive it is that it might look like they're being maximally transparent by making themselves available for Dáil questioning for hours on end. But ultimately what they need to do is actually put no new information out there. So they need to give the appearance of being transparent, but actually also appear like they've left it all out there. Those are salient developments from Catherine Martin tonight. The idea that she knew that Seanie Raelig wasn't prepared to meet her, wasn't even prepared to receive a written scolding, and was likely to resign if she got one, then going on television saying that she was trying to smooth it over and trying her best not to make Seanie Raelig's position untenable. It's very hard to square that with the idea that she went out to Montrose and wanted to let RTE know that if this story broke, she was happy to take questions about it. She was, in effect, telling Miriam O'Callaghan this was an issue she was prepared to discuss, all the while knowing that Seanie Raelig was likely to quit as a result. These things are ordinarily aimed at trying to put an end to the story. I dare say it might only put fresh fuel to the fire. I mean, that there are still more questions for the minister to face when she's making more statements in the chamber tomorrow.
All right, Gavin, we're going to leave that there for now, but there will be more from Gavin a little later in the programme. Here in studio this evening, I'm joined by Green Party TD, Nessa Horrigan, Sinn Féin TD, Matt Carthy, Ireland editor of the Irish Independent, Fionnán Sheehan, and by journalist David Davenport. You're all very welcome to the programme. To you first, Fionnán. Do you think the minister went on prime time to effectively push out Seanie Raelig before she resigned? Was this about asserting her authority? Was it a bit of a power grab? Is that what really happened?
So, Thomas Gould, Matt's colleague, my favourite accent in Leinster House. I have a great fondness of North.
And there is
Cork
some competition
accents
in there, I'd have to say.
I mean, he put it quite well. He said this was a setup, and it's very hard to disagree with him when you look at the picture that Gavin has presented to you there. You're basically saying, the minister said, I was misinformed, but it was unintentional. She was threatened to resign, so I sent her the letter. I summoned her. She sent her a letter of censure, summoned her to a meeting, and then thought, I'll go on prime time and I'll talk about this anyway.
And to be clear, she did make it very clear that she went on prime time. And when she arrived at prime time, the team there were not aware that this story was about to unfold, that the minister had been informed, but that her team seemed to inform prime time that this story was about to be unfolded, therefore inviting the questions, I suppose, that she was eventually asked about whether or not she could have confidence in a chair who had misinformed her.
Sorry, just to be clear, her team, as she put it, didn't respond to queries that day about this issue. So she deliberately avoided responding to questions about this issue before she went on prime time and decided, I want to handle it this way. So that was her decision to go down that route. What came across again today is this naivety where she's trying to say, geez, I didn't know when you go on national television and express all sorts of disappointment and criticism of a state board chair that you're asked, would you have confidence in them? There seems to be this bad judge of character where she doesn't seem to realise that Seán Ní Reilly is a substantial person and doesn't want to be scolded like a school child. And then this indecision where she's saying, oh, I want her to talk to me tomorrow, but I can't talk to her tonight. I mean, throughout the day, from 11 o'clock in the morning to 9:30 at night, she never once picked up the phone to Seán Ní Reilly.
She didn't. Her Secretary General seemed to be relaying these messages back.
Keeps on telling us the direct line of communication to the minister is the chair. So is that how bad a relationship that she had with the chair that is in the key state agency under her remit that she didn't even have the common courtesy to pick up the phone and say, listen, I've got an issue here.
And I've heard David Davenport, what she could have said, I hear, chair, you've taken this very badly. I hear you've said you're not willing to take this letter of censure. Let's not go any further right now. Let's try and draw a line under this before I go on prime time tonight and effectively sack you. So did she want the chair gone? Had the relationship between the two of them broken down?
I find it hard to believe that the minister didn't know what the consequences of her actions would be. I'm equally baffled by the fact that Seán Ní Reilly may have irritated and annoyed the minister on a couple of occasions, but it certainly wasn't a hanging offence for the chair of a state board that was in such a crucial situation. The other thing I'll say is that I think that Catherine Martin is at the gap tonight. I think it wasn't a bad performance. She let slip this detail that was tic-tacking between herself and Seán Reilly, and she effectively knew what the consequence of her actions would be. The third point I would make is that there's quite an astonishing survey in the Irish Times yesterday which shows that public interest in this story fell off a cliff once Ryan Tubridy ceased being the focus and the focus moved to corporate governance. The story flatlined since then. There were a couple of pulses the odd time when personalities got involved, when Breda O'Keefe's payoff came centre stage. But by and large, I think the government will be happy that, number one, Catherine Martin put in a fairly solid performance and that things are about to move on.
Well, in fairness, I would agree with you, but I think the government brought this story back front and centre last Thursday by effectively dismissing Seán Ní Reilly back on air.
I take your point on what Catherine Martin did succeed in doing with her political maladroitness is to shift the focus onto the government when it had been firmly on to RTE, and that was not a welcome development for ministers. But by and large, I don't see this as a threat. It's an election year. Catherine Martin will not be sacrificed, not least because there's no Green who wants to step up and take the job.
Nasa, was it an error of judgment to handle us the way she did, go on primetime last week and dismiss Seán Ní Reilly the way she did?
I think ultimately the role, as it's described in the Oireachtas Committee tonight, Seán Ní Reilly, that was not a viable role any longer. The relationship had completely broken down, as far as I can see. And as the minister said herself, she could not rely on the information she was receiving from her key point of contact in the middle of a crisis in our public broadcasting. Effectively, that role then is at an end. And I think we can dance on the head of a pin, or, you know, I understand that people are interested in the drama of how it played out, but ultimately how it played out is neither here nor there.
Well,
She fed
the drama. They could have had the meeting. They could have come to an agreement. She could have stepped away. She fed the drama by going on primetime before she spoke to the chair and dismissing her. Did she handle that properly?
Well, she said today in the Oireachtas Committee that she felt she had booked prime time. She doesn't do it very often. She wanted to, you know, maintain that booking. Personally, I'm not quite as polite as Catherine Martin. I would have cancelled that booking. But
you would have cancelled the booking, so you wouldn't have gone on prime time that night and dismissed Seán Ní Reilly the way she did.
I think what it comes down to is, would you pick up the phone? And I actually think that the reason she gave for not doing that was a very reasonable way of explaining it, which is that we're talking now about who knew when about remuneration. And the reason we don't really know what happened is because of phone calls. And what she wanted to do was get in a room with those people face to face, including her own officials, and make sure that everything was noted properly. So that is why she waited. And she, in fairness,
but to be clear, that
she
was
sent
never
an invitation and there was no answer.
But to be clear, it should have been clear to the minister that meeting was never going to happen, given the fact that the chair had said to her secretary general, there's a possibility I'm going to quit here if I'm sent this letter, which is going to scold me for making the mistake that I put my hands up and admitted to.
The moment the chair said that, her role was unviable.
To come to you, Matt Carthy, the defence here all evening from the minister was, I couldn't rely on the chair, and that this wasn't a one-off, this misinformation that she'd been given around whether or not the Remuneration Committee had signed off on the exit package for Richard Collins. That misinformation wasn't a one-off. There was misinformation about D4. She hadn't told her prior to coming into a committee that she'd asked for her resignation. And there was also sort of misinformation, which she admitted, around Rory Coveney's package. She, the minister, believed that he had resigned. Actually, he didn't really resign. He also got an exit package. So her defence was, look, I couldn't rely on my chair here. I had no choice.
So, in fairness to the minister, I think she was right to be frustrated, even angry at the fact that she was given incorrect information at meetings by the chair of a state board. That's where my sympathy for Catherine Martin ends, because the way in which she dealt with that was entirely inappropriate and reached the point of being utterly unmannerly in terms of how you deal with somebody who, out of all of the debacles we've seen in the past year, and this was reflected across all political representatives in the committee, Seán O'Rahilly is considered to be one of the people that has actually come out of all of this with integrity. She took on a role, a very difficult job, and waived her remuneration for that job. When we're talking about all these people who had oversaw the crisis and walked away with hundreds of thousands of euros of public money in payouts, we had somebody who was actually willing to step up to the mark, take on a very difficult job, purely driven by a sense of public service. That is somebody who I think we want to emulate across state bodies, not to see a minister going on national television and publicly rebuking and essentially sacking live on air. That is not the way to do it.
The minister said at the committee this evening, I had to be truthful in that interview with Primetime. That was her defence. I'm asking for transparency. I couldn't go on Primetime and lie.
Well, what the minister did, and I'm not certainly wouldn't accuse her of lying, but she did not divulge the full truth of the matter. She did not say that invitation to Seán O'Rahilly to attend a meeting was sent exactly 2 hours before the programme aired. She did not indicate that she knew at that stage that by sending that letter she was essentially going to force Seán O'Rahilly's resignation, because she had given it. She had not indicated at all that there was a myriad of conversations that took place that day between Seán O'Rahilly and various officials within her department, and that none of those conversations actually involved the minister herself picking up the phone, because regardless of the misdemeanour in terms of failing to give the correct information at meetings, the one thing that Seán O'Rahilly did was do her best, I would contend, in terms of the job. And the least she deserved, in my view, was a phone call to be informed that the minister intends to publicly humiliate her live on national television.
Nasa?
But sure, that's a 10-part mini-series, what you're describing. She was asked a question and she tried not to say that.
She gave the question to RTE to ask her.
We have had just listened to 3 hours of questioning and we have barely covered all of those issues. And Deputy Carthy is then saying, well, why didn't you say all of that in prime time?
No, I'm not.
That's a big lie.
No, that's not what I am saying at all.
To be clear, and she said it in the meeting, her advisors briefed Primetime on the story.
Well, as she said in the Oireachtas Committee, she was told as she was going into Primetime that this was about to break. Now, as you know, here there are researchers and they would be advising people on the floor of breaking news, and it was quite likely that a question was going to come in.
Oh, no, and it's also highly likely, I would say, that ministers would come on a programme and hope that the team and the presenters don't know of this breaking 100%. News story and that they get out the door without having to, you know, publicly sack somebody. Fionnán, there was another person who was spoken about a lot, particularly in the first, I think, half of the committee meeting today, and that was Kevin Backhurst, who was obviously in the room with Seán O'Rahilly for those two meetings on Monday and Wednesday when Seán gave the wrong information to the minister. Shane Cashels said that it was wrong that the minister would have confidence in the DG, but not have confidence in the chair, given the fact that we are to assume that the DG knew what Seán O'Rahilly was saying was incorrect. And he didn't. He didn't put her right.
Yeah, the point that Shane Cashels, Micheál Carrigy and Matthew McGrath were raising was, is he not guilty of the same crime that you were so mortally offended by against Sean O'Reilly that you decided to humiliate her on national television, send her a letter of censure and summon her to a meeting. And the minister's response was, my line of communication is with the chair. That's the same chair that she doesn't know her telephone number because she can't ring her. So, yeah, this is the issue now. Kevin Backhurst did know, we know, because he was the man who brought it to the Remuneration Committee. He outlined the process himself. There's a mediation process that's dealt with by the HR department. That then goes to the Secretary General. That then goes to the Remuneration Committee brought by him. We know he attended that meeting. So when she was directly asked today, did Kevin Backhurst sit silently in those meetings when Sean O'Reilly said there was no board involvement, and did he sit there and say nothing? And she said that was correct. He didn't open his mouth.
But that's a ridiculous line of argument. I mean, if Fionnuala, not from you, Fionnuala, but from
the minister, that her direct line is with the chair, not the DG.
More
that was
so
her
from
defense
Shane
today.
Castles and his colleagues. I mean, if you're in a meeting, Fionnuala, with your editor-in-chief in public, and he misspeaks, you're not going to rebuke him in public. You'll say to him afterwards, look, you might want to clear that up. And that's exactly what... I'm not defending Kevin Backhurst. It's just there on the record. Kevin Backhurst apparently drew it to the attention of Sean O'Reilly. I'm not a spokesperson for RTE, but this is what they say. And that she then lifted the phone to the minister to clarify things. You know, I mean, actually, I think politically, the dogs that aren't barking here are the opposition parties. The Social Democrats are effectively backing up the minister. There's no call from Sinn Féin for her resignation. And there's a slightly pathetic whimper from Labour saying that the minister might think of resigning.
I'm not quite sure what the call is from Labour, to be honest,
think the point I would make is that the opposition don't really smell fresh blood here.
Do you not?
Oh, I think the minister doesn't have a handle on this, has never had a handle on these issues at all.
And you don't have confidence in her?
I have no confidence in this government. And I think the very fact that
an out, isn't it? No, I mean, you do have the possibility here, if you wanted, you could put down a motion of no confidence in a minister that you have no confidence in, a minister who's overseeing a huge and existential crisis at our public service broadcaster, and you're choosing not to do
so. To be quite frank, if we were to bring forward motions of no confidence in every incompetent minister, we will be doing nothing else, only bringing forward motions of no confidence in this government.
You did it and it didn't work.
You did it with Helen McEntee a few weeks ago, didn't you? Is that the reason? Is there a fear that failed, that backfired? There's no public appetite for blood here.
Let's be clear, and I disagree with David on this point. There are as many unanswered questions tonight as there were before Catherine Martin set foot in that committee, and we will be demanding answers to those questions.
But no motion of no confidence?
Not at this time, no.
OK. Not ruling it out, or just...
No,
I'll
never
that?
Rule anything out. What I'm saying is that Catherine Martin still has questions to answer, because at the end of the day, RTE is a publicly owned company for which there has been huge mismanagement of those public funds for which it has been entrusted. And there is a need for absolute transparency and accountability. And at the end of the day, government have to grab it by the scruff of the neck, and they have not been in control of this situation. And the minister's response every single time an issue has arose has been to point the finger at somebody else. It's always somebody else's fault, and it's never her responsibility. And that's why I think most of the public have made up their mind that this government do not have have control over what's been happening with RTE.
Fionnuala, there were some attempts by some of those present at the committee today to establish what the department knew about the role of the Remuneration Committee and when they knew it, right? There's been a hair split over this for the last couple of weeks, but this was actually essentially really important. Did the department know, prior to the minister asking the question of Sean O'Reilly, that the Remuneration Committee would have had to sign off on Richard Collins's package? Did we get clarity on that?
Well, we got some fairly forensic questioning from...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Brendan Griffin of Fine Gael about the terms of reference for the Remuneration Committee and the guidance that was provided by RTE to the department last November on this issue. And the answer he seemed to get back was, well, we only read that last week. I mean, that basically, in a nutshell, seemed to be the answer. And it does go back to the point here that this seems to be a department that's pretty sleepy. A minister is pretty disinterested. When something becomes controversial, she suddenly shows great interest in it. She's told last April, we've just hired one of the biggest accountancy firms in the country and one of the biggest legal firms in the country to investigate two rogue invoices. OK, no problem, lads. Sure, get back to me when that's back. No questions asked. Middle of the summer, the person who was in charge of Toy Show the Musical leaves RTE. The minister says tonight she only found out last week that there was a payoff there.
This was Rory Coveney.
But that was obvious last July. I mean, Kevin Backhurst actually answered that question last July. He didn't divulge how much, but he made it plain as day. So did the minister not ask at the time? So these guys who have gone. Likewise with Breed O'Keefe. Last summer we find out that she got a redundancy payment and that there was an issue there. Again, only raising issues now about departures. I mean, why the Richard Collins thing happened in October and she's only asking questions in the last week.
She did the odd time, David Davenport, when she was asked to detail about that. She would say that's an operational manner, for the Director General. It's not up to me as the Minister to ask that level of detail.
Yeah, but Catherine Licken, the former General Secretary, a diligent and hard-working official, took the phone call from Sinéad Ní Raithéilí. She can't recall whether there was any detail sought or given about Richard Collins's package. I struggle with that. That she wouldn't, being the insightful person she is, say, well, what exactly are the details the minister might need to know? But we don't know.
I actually suspect that in that instance, because the minister's narrative is that Sinéad Ní Raithéilí rang the Secretary General and essentially said that the process has been concluded and that nobody then asked, well, what was the conclusion of the process? And my suspicion is that the department were probably aware that this involved a payout and were quite happy not to be informed.
This also includes people's employment contracts and the deals that they make with their employer. And as the minister said today, when she was asked, what are all your staff in the department doing? She said, well, I could have 100,000 staff and they can't break the law. And the law is telling us, and my legal advice is telling us, that we cannot break those contracts.
But she knows, she admitted, the only way you could know
you're breaking the law if you knew that there was a confidentiality agreement. Yeah. And in order to know that, you have to ask what was the conclusion of the process.
And
that question, according to the minister, wasn't actually asked.
If she didn't know it last July, she does know it now.
It has been released to her now. But she repeated a number of times that there is employment law here. There are contractual issues involved here that we can't just ride roughshod over.
But has it not been a defence, NASA, all along for the minister? I wasn't given that information. I didn't receive that information. As a minister, you're not meant to ask questions. Do you not need to show curiosity when there is a huge crisis? We have to put this
into context, right? We're at committee session 11 now, which is over 30 hours of evidence. I started looking at the documents and gave up after about the 300 pages. Like, there is a huge amount of information now coming from RTE. I'm not sure if it's making RTE more transparent. I think we're actually drowning now in the information. And unsurprisingly, I think things are being lost.
Well, did the minister help the situation?
Today?
Last Thursday.
That's a good question. I do think that role was at an end. And I think if you have a chair who will not speak to the minister, who won't accept a letter from the minister and won't come to a meeting, that role is over.
Well, she would have perhaps spoken to the minister if the minister had called her.
Well, the minister invited her and didn't receive an answer.
For God's sake. I mean, It's fairly simple now. RT are in a worse position than they were this time
last
year.
Right.
They had
right.
a perfectly good chair in place for 18 months was getting to the bottom of what was going on in that organisation for years beforehand.
To be fair, she was giving her minister. She was not giving her the correct information. She was. And then the minister did go out and brief the media with the wrong information. She does have to be able to rely on the chair in fairness.
Just to be clear here, what the minister is accusing the chair of doing was keeping a secret of the process in line with correct corporate governance that she herself had put in place, of which there were minutes, of which there were records, of which she had informed her department. And Catherine Martin decides, there's a vast conspiracy here against me because Sioné Rathlé had gone about her job in the correct manner. And just because she didn't give her the right answer in a meeting where a vast number of issues, as you say, came up, and actually came back and confessed that I should have told you this yesterday, but in fact I was mistaken. Oh, the minister says, oh, we have to scold her now, have to put manners on her. She was either going to humiliate her in prime time last Thursday night, or she was going to humiliate her in 4 weeks' time when the letter would come out under FOI, or maybe it would have been leaked at the weekend, one
okay.
or the other.
The question looks now, she I suppose, she David, it. Is the minister safe?
Yes, I think so. I'm interested to hear NASA's comments. I wonder, do the Social Democrats think that the minister did anything wrong? Because it seems to me that the position has moved in behind her now, listening to your comments there. Mm-hmm. Certainly, no call for resignations from our friend here. Our
Labour have been on to say they are clear in their position. Her position is untenable, is what they're saying.
Well, I think it's... if that's the best they can do, I wouldn't be too worried if I was Catherine Martin.
Do you still have faith in Catherine Martin, in her leadership, in her ability?
This is to me. I absolutely do. Yeah, I have full confidence in Catherine. I think she's been a very good minister for the arts. I think RTE is a legacy issue and it is chaotic. But I note that she said that we want to get the reports in middle of March and have a decision on that long-term funding and way forward by the summer. I mean, I think if we got it out the door by the end of this government, we'd be doing well.
Do you think that's going to happen, David Davenport?
Not in a million years. This is a job for the next government. And any minister you talk to will say the same.
All right. Do stay with us because after the break, we will be going back to Gavin, who will be speaking to some members of that media committee. So do stay with us. Well, let's go back over to our political correspondent, Gavin Riley, who's live at Leinster House for us tonight. Gavin?
Kira, thank you very much. That meeting of the Oireachtas Media Committee ran on about half an hour behind schedule, so members are literally only coming out of Committee Room 2 now. One of the members who was at all of that committee is Labour Senator Marie Sherlock. Marie, your party had expressed in advance of this that you had no confidence in Catherine Martin. Are you any more assured after what you've heard?
Well, I think I'm even more bewildered this evening. Like, effectively, the Minister has told us that she accepts that the mistakes made by Sioné Rathlé last week were unintentional. She then went ahead and issued a letter on the Thursday expressing disappointment, even though she knew that that letter was probably going to prompt the disappointment or the resignation of Sioné Rathlé. And she doubled down again by going on air that evening. And I think there's a whole series of questions now as to why the minister was telling the public that there was going to be a meeting on Friday morning, when the reality is that meeting was never going to take place.
Is it not fair enough, though, to be writing a letter to a chair, as you heard her say herself in the meeting this evening? She can't possibly go around doing press conferences and addressing the public if the chair is giving her the wrongful information.
But the chair clarified on Thursday morning. Like, this is the thing. There was an unintentional mistake. She clarified on Thursday morning, and yet the minister persevered with her course of action. Look, I think the bigger issue for me this evening is that the failure of the minister and indeed her officials, and she has a whole broadcasting and media unit within her department tasked with looking at the whole of the broadcasting sector and specifically RTE, and that none of them asked questions about any of the exit packages relating to those high profile departures from last year.
So when Rory Coveney goes last July, when Richard Collins goes last October, when they receive more documents in November about the new duties of directors Nobody asked any questions.
Nobody asked any questions. And the reality is that RTÉ is in receipt of a state bailout. You know, it was in receipt of state bailout prior to the crisis emerging last June. And of course, that money had to be upped last, at the end of last year. And there's another 40 billion that's due to come this year. And all the time we hear the government saying, oh, we need to see reforms happen before we can give more money. But they're not even asking questions about the packages that were undertaken or given for high profile departures. And the reality is there was an excuse given this evening. Oh, we got a whole load of documents in November and they weren't even categorised properly. Like, to be honest, the whole thing is just even becoming more farcical now. And I have a very big concern that whenever the new chair comes in and any potential new chair will be saying, well, how will an issue in future be dealt with with the minister?
We have to get back to studio, but are you now going to consider a motion of no confidence if you're even more bewildered now about the minister's position?
Well, look, we've been extremely clear, right? There's 13,500 people homeless. There's 4,000 children living in homeless accommodation tonight. There's thousands of children waiting for disability assessments. We're not going to be wasting our time, our precious time, in the Dáil Éireann Seanad calling for motions of no confidence. Like, the reality is the government need to get a grip on this crisis and ensure that RTÉ is on a sound footing.
Okay, Marie Sherlock, thank you very much for joining your time. I know it's very, very late. Ciara, back to you in studio. Hope to be joined in a few minutes by Niamh Smith, the chair of the committee.
Thanks, Gavin. Nasa Hurricane, are you surprised that members of the opposition aren't putting down motions of no confidence in this minister?
Well, I suppose surprise is the wrong word. I followed the bluster at the end of last week from particularly Labour on this issue. I suppose I was expecting a motion of no confidence. Usually when you go down that road, you finish your journey. So it is odd. I'll be honest with you there. But I suppose I would like to come back to something that Senator Sherlock said there around the unintentionality. And I think, you know, there's a reality here in terms of like how we operate, both politically and in any organisation, which is it doesn't really matter if the information was unintentionally wrong. If you can't rely on the information you're being supplied with through your key contacts, then what are you to do? Unintentionality doesn't come into it.
OK, let me just... we'll come back to Gavin in a couple of minutes. Given what's happened with previous ministers, Fiona, if you look back at other ministers that have had to resign, do you think the minister is lucky by the timing of all of this? Is she lucky to survive this?
She's lucky that she's in the Green Party and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael can't do without them and Eamon Ryan can't do without her, because then 49% of the Green Party members are fed up with him because he's thrown her under the bus. So she's staying put as a result of that. I mean, if anything, I'd say there's been a lot of eyebrows raised probably in the last week about the manner in which she handles complicated crises.
OK, let me just go back to Gavin Reilly, because he has the chair of the committee with him there now.
That's right, Ciara. Now I'm joined by Niamh Smith, the chair of the Oireachtas Committee on Tourism and Media. Niamh, a very long session. We learned a lot. In truth, what jumps out for you about what we hear this evening?
Good evening, Gavin. Well, I suppose we did a lot of interrogation around who knew what when in those critical hours since the primetime interview. But we also delved a little bit into, I suppose, the role of the officials in the department and who knew what. I myself delved into a little bit on the exit packages, which I think is of real interest to people. Asking the question, we learned that Mr. Coveney resigned, but while he resigned, he got an exit package. And following on from that, I asked about Dee Forbes, even though she resigned, did she get an exit package? The minister, I'm happy to confirm to me that no, she didn't. But I also was interrogating other issues, for example, Mr. Nally, who also exited RTÉ, and I understand with a package.
One thing that was remarkable, we were talking to Marie Sherlock about this a moment ago, is how incurious the officials within the department seemed to be. That when they knew that Rory Coveney was gone last summer, when they knew that Richard Collins was gone, when they were sent tranches of new documents in November, nobody seemed to be picking up the phone and asking RTÉ, when did these take effect? Or, by the way, was there any oversight of this?
Yeah, and I think that certainly caused a lot of eyebrows raised tonight at the committee hearing in terms of what the role of the officials were. And I would have understood before tonight's meeting, I would have thought that listening to the minister speak about this, that this was the minister, the DG and the chair that were in the room, when in actual fact the minister said tonight there was probably 6 or 8, 7 people in the room, including her officials. And a lot of my colleagues did contend that not only was the chair in the room who didn't recall having these remuneration or these packages approved at remuneration, but also the DG, also officials from the department were also at that meeting, and nobody said, actually, Minister, there's been approval for these.
And does that raise questions then for you, and is likely to be a matter that you might still want to pursue with them?
It may be, and Deputy Griffin raised tonight the standing invitation that we'll be affording to Shuni Rahali and others ministers as well. So I do think there's a bit to go on this.
Okay, a bit to go, and it's been a long night already, so we will let you go. Niamh Smith, thank you very much for joining us on this tonight's show. Back to you in studio, Ciara.
Thanks, Gav. We're going to have to leave that conversation there for now. My thanks to Matt, to Hyunin and to David. NASA is going to be staying with me because next we debate EU plans to remove the aviation fuel tax exemption. What could it cost consumers? You're very welcome back. Well, Green Party TD Nasa Hourigan is still here with me, and I'm also joined now by aviation journalist Owen Corrie from TravelExtra.ie because we're going to debate an EU plan to remove the tax exemption on aviation fuel. Airlines currently do not pay tax on jet fuel, but this is about to change under EU proposals. We ask, what will it all cost? So first of all, I suppose, Owen, to you, what is the justification for this exemption?
It's there for a long, long time. It's an international agreement, Chicago Convention, 1944. It was put in place to make sure that people weren't trying to pull fast ones in international aviation, that governments were trying to tax rival airlines out of it. And it's held its shape.
But I suppose what's the justification? It was agreed, I think, back in that Chicago Convention that was back in the 1940s. We know a lot more now about the damage being done to the environment because of fuel, including jet fuel. So what is the justification for continuing with an exemption?
It's the same as the reason it was introduced. There is a safety element. It makes sure that airlines are paying the same for jet fuel all over the world, wherever they land, wherever they take off. Governments have been, since 1944, looking at ways to shake down aviation, to try and tax them, to try and push rival airlines out. There's a lot of politicking. There were lots of attempts down the years to try and introduce, and everybody who's looked at it has backed away and said it's unravelling this is going to be a little bit more complicated than we anticipated.
Do you accept that, NASA, that this is going to be too complicated to do?
No. I mean, we've just seen a corporation tax, a global corporation tax minimum introduced. And if we could get to an agreement on that, we can definitely do it on aviation fuel. The Chicago Convention that we're talking about here has been significantly revised 8 times in its lifespan. And it also has about 19 annexes, which are constantly under revision. So it is possible to bring agreement. I think what's interesting here is the idea that the EU would show leadership, because you can see the EU starting to do that with things. They're almost creating like a carbon boundary around the EU. And so actually, I think if the EU moved on it and created within the single market some kind of a tax on this, I think actually it would show leadership. And in the same way that, let's say, when the US and the EU came to agreement on the corporation tax, we saw that. I think it will happen. And I think it will happen because the whole idea of the environment is costing government so much, and most of our taxes on the environment are based on two principles. One is the polluter pays. The person who creates the pollution, or the group or the organisation that creates the pollution, should pay for that pollution. Not the farmer down in Munster, not the guy in Cork who's been flooded 3 or 4 times, the actual polluter. And then the second one is that consumption taxes are fairer. That if we know what people are using, then we have an actual mechanism to tax them fairly, so those people who can't pay won't, and those who can do.
So it has been unfair, therefore, that the polluter, the airline industries here, haven't been paying, Owen Corrie, when so many of us have.
Well, it's the same principle applies. You pay jet airlines pay the same for jet fuel wherever they load and they land and take off in the world. They're not going to be shopping around. They're not going to be skipping out of airspace, in and out of airspace. The reality is that everybody who's looked at this, and governments in Africa and Asia and all of this have been looking to try and tax this, they've gone for after the airline ticket. 33% of what you pay, in an airline ticket, goes in tax. In a lot of the transatlantic flights, sometimes the tax is higher than what the airline gets. So while they haven't had the power to tax fuel, taxing aviation has been something that's been Vigorously done, rigorously
okay,
done around
so
the world, including within the EU.
Aviation's already been taxed quite vigorously. Would you
no,
agree
no, no.
With that,
in the same way that like we pay motor tax and then we also pay fuel in our car, we should be paying aviation taxes in lots of forms, but also aviation fuel tax. And let's not get it confused here. The aviation industry is undergoing incredible profits at the moment. I think Ryanair made something like a 60% increase in their profits, and certainly almost twice what they were making in 2019. Like, it is an incredibly profitable industry. We could raise taxes through aviation fuel, and there would be absolutely no reason for the industry to raise ticket prices if they chose not to.
Yeah, and haven't the CSO argued that this exemption has been worth about 5 billion euro to the industry over the last decade? They've done very well under this, Owen Corry.
I'm not sure they have. The aviation industry has lost a hell of a lot of money. You talk about Ryanair's profits. They took a hit of 2 billion during the pandemic. It's interesting.
They made 2 billion last year.
They didn't make 2 billion last year, but they're still chasing the hit they made over the pandemic. But back to Kira's question here. There are lots of ways of getting money, of taxing the airline ticket without going after that key jet fuel. Because,
but why? Because if I go to fill up my tank with petrol or diesel as the consumer of that fossil fuel, I pay a specific tax on that. Why does the airline, when they go to fill up with their jet fuel, get away with not paying a tax
apples and oranges,
on their fossil fuel?
Apples and oranges.
In
you
what
don't,
way?
You're not subject to an
consumers.
International agreement. You're not an industry that brings 1.3 trillion of foreign direct investment into Ireland. If anybody is involved in propping up the economy or bringing that boost to the economy, they're doing deals with revenue commissioners. It's not within the EU's remit. They can start taxing the EU airlines. But then we have this uneven playing field that the whole point of the Chicago Convention, very simple, was to avoid exactly what the EU are proposing doing. And the EU have the power. They have actually decided in 2003 that domestic flights can be taxed. It's very interesting that would apply to the Kerry and Donegal flights, which are being subsidised in Ireland. And one government, one country did that and then changed their mind. It's the same country that the EU Climate Commissioner comes from that is making this proposal at the moment.
Isn't there a difficulty here, Nasa, that if the EU introduce this tax, that those airline industries, they'll just pass it on to the consumers, that the customers price that they pay for the tickets will just go up?
Do I think that the aviation industry is capable of profiteering off any increase? Absolutely, I do. But ultimately,
will the customer pay more?
There is absolutely no need for the customer
to
pay more.
But in the reality,
the reality is that 4% of emissions in the EU are created by the aviation industry. And Michael O'Leary isn't going to come down and pay for the flood defences down in Cork. Michael O'Leary is not going to pay for all of the impacts that ordinary people are going to experience from climate. The polluter should pay, and that's the aviation industry.
Yeah. And it is true, isn't it? I think it's 3.8% of all greenhouse gas emissions within the EU come from the aviation industry. The polluter is not paying for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of figures floating around. 2% is what the emissions are from the aviation industry worldwide. You would actually think it was 82% the way aviation is being held up and targeted as the chief polluter. The first thing
I don't
that
think
would
anybody
happen,
in fairness has said it's the chief polluter. They're just saying there should be fairness across the board.
It's interesting. Like, if you quantify the coverage of climate emissions, it tends to come back to aviation. It's been surveyed that this is what shows up in national media. What would happen if it happened in Ireland is that most of our air traffic would move to Belfast. We'd have 30 million going through Belfast, 5 million through Dublin every year instead of the other way around. That's exactly what would happen.
OK, look, we're going to have to leave that conversation there for now. My thanks to Owen Corry and to Nasa Hourigan. That's it from us. Our programme is available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. But from the Lit team here, good night. Take care.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.